Start some trouble and call the fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
What's so good about it? Nothing to do to save his life, call his wife and... Yeah, all right. 3:59. How about that? Bum, 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 bum. Good morning, everyone. How are we doing on this Tuesday morning? I'm miserable. How are you? Good. That's right. I allow the Yankees to affect me too much. But that's what happened last night as they got pounded by the Chicago White Sox. 12-2, embarrassed. In front of the world, as the worst team on pace to be the worst team in the history of baseball. That's right. Took the Yankees out to the woodshed, won their second game of the entire second half since the All-Star break, as they had lost 21 games in a row, and the Yankees embarrassed themselves in a display of inept clutch hitting, the likes of which has never been seen before. 2-for-18 with runners in scoring position. That's right, 2-for-18. 2-for-18! That's a series. The Mets had a terrible series in Seattle. They went 2-for-18 with runners in scoring position or somewhere close. That's a series. That's not an evening. How the hell do you get 18 guys in scoring position? Well, ask and ye shall find out. 9 hits and 11 walks. That's how. And this game was lost in the first two innings, where they had two times, and then the fourth inning again with the bunt we're going to get to in a second. And all you small ball, you know, fiends, wait a second, because I'm going to crush you. But the first two innings of this game, and you can feel it, and I think sometimes it's overblown. Sometimes it's overblown, the nature of, you know, oh, there's typical Yankees. All the Yankee fans who hate themselves. But in this, I have to admit, when the Yankees, whose offense has been far better since the trade of Jazz Chisholm, has been far better since that series in Fenway, the offense has been scoring a ton of runs, has been doing a pretty damn good job, still not winning enough because the bullpen's been a disaster and the starting rotation still has disastrous starts from Nestor Cortez and Stroman, namely, over the last 2 weeks. But the offense has come alive. But last night, you knew in that first inning, when it starts with a Verdugo and Soto walk back-to-back, then Judge hits a double down the left field line, you have a run in, second and third, nobody out, and the Yankees, and this middle of the order that I was trying to tell you was fixed. They have their cleanup hitters. Thank you. Wells and Stanton have answered our prayers. Stanton with the big 3-run home run the other day. Wells has been the best offensive catcher in the sport over the last 2 months. And you get pop-up from Stanton, pop-up from Wells, pop-up from Torres in the first inning. And you know, in that moment, it's going to be one of those nights. Because if there are trends with the New York Yankees that are fair and honest, and you could see it, and you could smell it, and you could taste it, one of them is their inability to come through with runners in scoring position. When it starts like that, in the first inning, you know where it's going. And then, obviously, Luis Gil, who's another story altogether, who had a miserable start after having a couple of really good bounce-back starts and was on a little bit of a run, had a miserable start against the White Sox. And we'll get to him, if you'd like, at 888-808-1019. But he gives up 2 runs in the first. And then they're in the exact same position in the second inning. Chisholm leads off with a single. Volpe with a walk. A fly ball from LeMahieu moves the runner over. Verdugo walks. And you've got, you know, base. You got an opportunity at first and second. Again, Soto pops up. And Judge hits a fly ball with the bases loaded. Bases loaded with Soto. He pops up. And Judge hits one just to the wall in right field. That would have been a grand slam at Yankee Stadium. But alas, they were not playing in the Bronx last night. And back-to-back innings. You had second and third, nobody out. You had bases loaded, one out, with Soto and Judge coming up, and they muster one run between both innings, and you know right there where this game is going. Now, it got ugly because I told you that they didn't have much pitching in this game. Obviously, Luis Gil didn't have it. He brings in Hill. He gives up one run and two and a third, who gives actually a decent outing for him after a shaky first three batters. And then he goes to De Los Santos, who has absolutely nothing, but he's forced to stick with him, Aaron Boone is, because the bullpen's in disarray when you combine the rainouts and the doubleheaders and the disaster that was the Sunday game where they had to go through all those relievers just to hang on to what was an 8-3 victory. And he has to leave that guy out there who's probably going to get cut today to bring up an arm from the minor leagues just to give them some arms. But he has to leave him out there because he's not going to jeopardize the rest of this series and jeopardize this bullpen to keep a 5-run deficit to the White Sox. So it gets ugly. It's embarrassing, the whole nine. But the worst part of it all, for me, because I've given Aaron Boone a pass many a time when other Yankee fans want to kill him. And a lot of Yankee fans want to talk about the urgency of this team. And I've talked about it a lot, too. That's my issue. When they've gone through their struggles, Aaron Boone continues to preach what he preaches. We all know it. It's right there in front of us, which is absolutely true. But it feels like, for me, there's a lot of this, we're the Yankees, we're very good, we'll be fine. And that kind of permeates through the team, especially during losing streaks and poor play stretches. And they don't show the urgency that can be, sometimes, necessary to snap out of it. And in this game, while I don't know if it's urgency necessarily, they did put 20 guys on. It's not like they were lifeless or didn't care. They threw two runners out at the plate. Verdugo throws a guy out in the first inning to limit the damage. Volpe throws a guy out with a runner at third base, less than two outs, and the infield drawn in. Like they didn't play terribly. Verdugo making dives all over the place. Like, this wasn't a lack of effort. This was a lack of pitching. A bullpen in disarray, and an offense that couldn't come through with a big moment to save their lives. But when I get to the complacency, in the fourth inning, they're in the same situation again, where they get the sixth walk of the game in the fourth inning, first and second, nobody on, top of the order coming up in Verdugo, and he lays down a bunt, or at least attempts to, and pops one up. And I hated it at the time. I was screaming at the television. I couldn't believe it. How stupid that bunt was. But then I couldn't believe the reaction and the comment from Verdugo after the game. And this is when you talk about the idea of lack of urgency. And as much as I'll defend Boone at times, and Verdugo was a problem in Boston, and even the great Alex Cora, who we know is one of the great managers in the history of baseball. We know how great Alex Cora is. Every time he steps on the field, he outmanages Aaron Boone, that's for sure. That's a talking point every single Red Sox game. Even he couldn't get through to Verdugo, and they were willing to trade him to the New York Yankees. But in this comment, to me, this comment speaks volumes of how comfortable the New York Yankees are. When he's asked about that bunt, which obviously Boone wouldn't answer the question either, whether or not it was called for or he did it on his own, which clearly he did it on his own. No one in their right mind would call that bunt. But when he's asked about the bunt, in the post game, this is what Alex Verdugo had to say.
All the bunts are always on me. I gave myself one chance to kind of see one and, try to put a swing on it. Took a strike, and he made a pitch up and in that I kind of didn't really want to bunt, but was already kind of out there and just got a little lazy with it and, popped it up. So, but that's like the first bunt I've ever popped up, so it happens.
I am absolutely mystified by that comment. One, in that spot in the game, he didn't want a bunt. He kind of half-asses a bunt, fully admits that he got lazy with it. Lazy! In the fourth inning of a game against the worst team in baseball, where you know this is going to be the reaction if you lose it. After twice already in the game, you have blown opportunities with runners on, bases loaded, second and third. You've got an opportunity here, first and second, nobody on, nobody out, with the two best hitters arguably in the world hitting behind you. And you decide to bunt and then fully admit you did it lazy. And then chuckle through the idea that it's the first time ever you've popped up and, hey, these things happen. I cannot believe the reaction there. It is so frustrating to hear a player laugh off the idea that he was lazy with a bunt in the fourth inning and that, hey, things happen. That's the game. That's the game. right there. And he got lazy in that moment and had no problem telling you and laughing it off. And as much as I try to defend Boone, that kind of mentality needs to be addressed. And I don't want to make too big a deal out of it because I typically don't buy into this stuff being as important as many people think. But that right there is a hard answer to swallow for me. You want to get lazy in a 10-0 victory in the eighth inning? Okay. You want to not run out an easy ground ball every once in a while because we all understand you can't, you know, even the great Joe Girardi admits on the broadcast, not everyone's going to run it out every single time, and Verdugo, God knows, doesn't run out ground balls to second base. I'll even forgive that at times. But I will not forgive a lazy bunt with first and second, nobody out in a game that you will be mocked for losing, that you've already blown multiple opportunities for, that you're starting pitchers on the ropes and you don't have a bullpen. That's not the moment to get lazy, Alex. And it's certainly not the time to laugh it off. Frustrating all around. And now tomorrow with Nestor Cortez, who by far has been their worst starting pitcher of the season and over the last few weeks, is on the mound to make sure they don't lose a series. Forget one game. And I know it's embarrassing. Everybody goes nuts about the score. I don't care. You're not allowed to lose a game to the White Sox. Okay, whatever. The Cleveland Guardians, who for a long time had the best record in baseball, lost a series, lost 3 out of 4. It happens. Any one game happens. And if they win the next two, they have played the White Sox 6 times and would have won 5 of 6. I'm perfectly fine with winning 5 of 6 and moving on. So if they win the next two games, it's forgotten. But if they lose one of the next two, or God forbid, both of the next two, we know what the reaction will be. And this is supposed to be a time where they're trying to make ground on a Baltimore Orioles team that struggled as well, no doubt. But everyone talks about how easy the schedule is for the Yankees. This is the time they're talking about. And right now, since the Philadelphia series where they swept the Phillies, they have played 4 consecutive series against teams under 500, and they are 5-5. And that ain't going to cut it. Not if you want to make up the ground, not if you want to be this division winner, and not if you want to make the most of an easy August schedule. So this game with Nestor Cortez, especially someone who made the comment about everybody wants to be us, since he put out that tweet, he's been god-awful. This is a big opportunity for Nestor Cortez to stand up, shut down a miserable team with the worst batting average in Major League Baseball, who put a pounding on you last night, and you on the precipice of being absolutely run out of Chicago, being mocked. Big game for Nestor later today. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Danny in Belrose. What's up, Danny?
Hey, good morning, Chris. How's it going?
Good morning. How are you? I've been better, Danny. Yeah. I've been better.
Me too. How the heck can you leave 16 men on base?
It's hard to fathom.
It's pathetic, honestly. I looked it up, actually. I was curious. It's a Major League record. That's the most we tied the Major League record for the most men left on base in a game. I mean, to achieve that as the worst team in baseball,
yeah,
in close to tying the Mets this year. They're on base by the 52 men.
Yeah, they're on pace to beat them. I mean, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Now, I don't get too hung up on their record. But the ineffectiveness and the inability to come through a hit. You have nine hits and 11 walks, and you score 2 runs, and one of them is on Jazz Chisholm, which I didn't even mention has to leave the game with an elbow injury, and it sounds like all the initial testing came back negative, and he's really saying it doesn't feel that bad, and we'll see what it is, but he has to leave this game. Yeah. One of the 2 runs you score is on an infield single and a heads-up excellent base-running effort from Jazz Chisholm. I mean, if he stays at third, they score 1 run. 9 hits and 11 walks, and you score 2 runs? How is that possible?
Yeah, it's just not being clutch. It's terrible.
That's it.
You can't do anything about it. What was I going to say? With the game tonight, Cortez better wake up, because if we lose a series to this team,
yeah.
But Boone needs to go. I'm sorry. Eventually, Boone needs to go.
Yeah, Boone's not going to get fired. Boone's not going to get fired for this. I know everybody wants this overreaction, this crazy reaction. It's not going to happen. Boone is not going to get fired. I know it's a different world when George was around. I get it. Nobody is firing their manager when they have the best record in all of baseball. All right? Heading into that game last night. And this is where, you know, as mad as I am, this is what bothers me. Because I can't just say, like, I even went as far as to get on Boone and talk about the mentality and get on Verdugo for those comments and how much they bother me. And then even the comments about, hey, no, it's not really a game that makes me think any different other than just it's another loss. And, like, those comments bother me. I've made note of it. I think it's important to make note of it, and I think it needs to change, no doubt. But then we go and we'll turn this loss into the manager needs to be fired. This proves the Yankees can't win. They're a terrible baseball team. They play down to their competition, which made me laugh. I mean, I got a bunch of it on Twitter. I heard callers calling into Keith saying it. I got a caller myself earlier in the show saying it. The idea, all we heard for the first 2.5 months was that all they beat is bad teams. That's it. That the record that they built, the excellent record that they built, the first team to 50 wins, the best record in baseball, that record they built was fugazi and shouldn't be taken seriously because it was built on beating bad teams. And now they lose to bad teams, and it's they always play down to their competition. They never beat bad teams. We can't, one way or the other, here's the moral of the story. Don't lose. Otherwise, we'll find a way to say how it's a part of a bigger problem. And this proves they can't. How can I expect this team to win the World Series when they lost to the White Sox once? I mean, are we serious? Again, last year, this time, the Diamondbacks were not very good. And at the end of the year, the Diamondbacks came into the lousy Yankee Stadium and had the Jake Bowers Yankees take 2 of 3. The Texas Rangers, who ended up winning the championship, were awful in September. They couldn't win the last series of the year. They allowed the Houston Astros to get the division on the last day of the year. Their bullpen couldn't get anybody out. They were a wreck. They were leading the division all year and blew it at the end of the season. And then they turned it on in the postseason. The bullpen was great, and they're champions. Let's not go so far that last night indicates that they cannot win. It's a frustrating loss. It's an ugly loss. And they have to be better. And they have to be better in clutch situations or they won't win. But we take these, you know, these one games and make, it's one of 162. And you want the manager fired. Maybe George would have done it. George would have fired them both. Cashman and Boone would be long gone by now. But say, you know, he was banished, and suddenly he just came back for today. Sure, he'd fire them off last night. Yeah, maybe he would. But no real executive in today's times are firing a team with the most wins in Major League Baseball. They're not firing that manager. Now, that's not to glorify them or say how great they are. It's just a fact. And then I heard a bunch of stuff about Juan Soto. Makes you nuts. You know, Juan Soto must be well. Like early on in the year, Juan Soto's going nowhere else. Oh my God. Do you see how much he loves it here? The fans are embracing him. He's embracing them. They're playing great baseball. He's leading the team. How could they let him go? He's going to actually go. Where is he going to go? He's going to go to Citi Field with that mess over there? Juan Soto's not going anywhere. Now all of a sudden it's like, Juan Soto's watching this crap, thinking he's got to get out of town. How could he stand for this? Oh my God, they're driving Juan Soto away. What are you talking about? You know what Juan Soto sees? Juan Soto sees 40,000 people every night at Yankee Stadium, beloved by the team, playing for the New York Yankees, who lead the American League in runs scored and lead the world in wins. Like, what are we talking about? But we're going to drive him away by a loss to Chicago. Can't we just get mad at a loss? Can't I just be frustrated in what I saw last night instead of having to make these wide-ranging declarations about what every single game means for the next 3 months? Let's just take it a game at a time, baby. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Terry in Amania real quick. What's up, Terry?
Good morning, great one.
Oh, thank you, Terry. Good morning to you. How are you?
I'm holding on. Two things.
Yeah.
Number one, I hope you and your family have a great vacation.
Oh, thank you very much. I hope so, too.
Number two, you've got a business. You start making shirts that have printed on the back of the sunburn protection shirt.
Right, yeah.
Sunburn protection shirt.
Yeah, that's it.
I am sensitive to this because I have very sensitive skin.
Yeah.
I am not allowed to go out into the sun unless I wear a long sleeve shirt.
Well, I mean, that's...
And I have absolutely no embarrassment doing it.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't either.
Oh, no.
Clean shirt on and go out and enjoy yourself.
Thank you very much, Terry. I appreciate it. I thought you wanted me to put all of that on the shirt. That doesn't... But I think the idea of a swim shirt that says, you know, something along the lines of hate sunburn, hiding nothing, something along those lines, maybe not, you know, could work. Could work. I could see that. I could see that. Rocco in the toga. What's up, Rocco?
Hey. That's all I can say. Hey, yeah. Captain Visor, please tell them how to fix that damn bullpen.
The bullpen's in disarray right now. I mean, between the doubleheaders and between the other day where... You know, Leiter needed a million pitches to give up three runs, and then Clay Holmes needed 45 pitches to get the four out save. Like, they needed someone to bite the bullet last night, and it was Santos, and that's why De Los Santos, and that's why they lost the score they did. But here's the thing, right? And I don't like this answer. I'm just giving it to you.
Uh-huh.
I'm not trying to tell you that this is the answer to all their prayers. But what I'm going to tell you is, you've got Hamilton and Efros coming back. I mean, that's
okay.
It. That's the answer.
But I hope so. I hope so, Captain Visor.
Yes.
Because there's no way they're winning the playoffs with that kind of bullpen not doing anything. Just
no.
Pitching,
but again,
batting practice.
I understand that. They got to turn it around. But the same thing happened to the Texas Rangers. And that's not to just say, you know, I'm not going to play the whataboutism game. I'm just saying that we have seen this before. The worst bullpen in the sport was the Washington Nationals through the first two, 3 months of the season, and then they went on to win a World Series. Now, they had a great starting pitching, but their bullpen was atrocious. Mm-hmm. The Texas Rangers last year's bullpen at the end of the year was abominable. It was awful, and they found a way to turn it on and win a World Series. It's not like the guys in the room have to be better. Now, right now, I don't have faith in that necessarily. I agree with you. We'd have to see it before I believe it, but Hamilton, who was brilliant last year and had his moments of good stuff this year, is coming back. Efros, who they traded for a couple years ago, who was effective when he pitched, it's been the injury bug that's killed him, but they need those guys to both be back, both be good. There's a lot of ifs, no doubt about it. I'm concerned, and I'm sorry, Rocco, I'm up against the break. Thank you very much, though, for the call, as usual. Those are the answers in the bullpen, because there really are no others, other than the conversation about moving Luis Gil, or when he gets back, sending Clark Schmidt to the bullpen. One of those two guys. But right now, I don't know if I trust the rotation enough to take Luis Gil out of it. It was a bad start last night, but every time he's going to pitch poorly, the innings is going to come up, and he's never faced innings like this in his entire career, no doubt about it. And moving him to the bullpen kind of makes sense, but he's got some stuff. He's got stuff for a reliever, no doubt. But we just saw him ineffective now in the first inning. Like, I don't know. Plus, when he's at his best, I want him starting. Man, he's dominant. It's about getting him to that place come October would be what I want to do. I got Efros and Hamilton coming back. See if that helps. But right now, the pitching is in disarray. The offense has actually been better up until today's complete lack of being able to get a single clutch hit. We have seen Stanton, who, by the way, had some of the worst at-bats yet. Like, Stanton is just a funny, funny guy, man. He's like my golf swing. It's just day-to-day. Because I mean, he was not that bad when he first came back. I expected worse. I expected more of these swings at sliders in the dirt and these ugly swings. And he really, you know, he wasn't being productive necessarily, but his at-bats weren't awful. And then the last two games, he hits that 450-foot bomb to dead center in the second game of the doubleheader, follows it up with a huge three-run home run that breaks the game open for the Yankees in the game on Sunday. And then you figure, just as he's getting hot and Wells is the best offensive catcher in the sport and they finally figured out the middle of this lineup behind Judge for protection, he gives you some of the worst. He gets in his first at-bat, the runners in second and third, he gets a hanging breaking ball right down the middle and pops it up. And then from there, the swings, the rest of the game, couldn't even look at him. I have no idea what happened to Stanton last night. Atrocious at-bats. After you thought he was turning the corner. Puzzling game all around. But hey, again, it's one game. They're a half a game out of first place. They're securely in the first wild card spot. As ugly as it was, it's one game. You win the next two, you forget about it. But they better win tomorrow. They better win later today with Nestor Cortez on the mound.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
He's got it! He's got
sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 431, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. You can call me or hit me up on Twitter. And I just got a tweet, and I gotta be honest. As frustrated as I am with the Yankees right now, I don't know if this is the issue. You tell me. Give me a call and let me know if maybe I'm blind. Listen, I was frustrated with the comment in the postgame from Verdugo, but I didn't get a sense he wasn't trying. But here's the tweet. Every team gets up for the Yankees. The Yankees have to match that passion. When they were in Boston, the Yankees enjoyed getting up for that series. This time of year, the team has to have passion. Do you think the Yankees last night didn't show passion? Were the 20 runners who got on base passionate? And just the inability to drive them in, the lack of passion? Were the diving attempts and catches and from Verdugo out in the outfield, lack of passion, throwing runners out at the plate, lack of passion? You mentioned the Red Sox series. They had a 7-4 lead in that first game of the Red Sox series and blew it. They lost the first game of that Red Sox series. Was there no passion there until the passion showed up on Saturday? Like, I don't disagree with what you said, and I'm frustrated with last night's performance and last night's game, and I think it's just easy to look at it and say they had no passion. And you've got to match the passion of the White Sox. The Yankees got 20 guys on base. The Yankees had 9 hits and 11 walks. The Yankees, the one run they scored was a hustle run. I mean, besides Judge hitting one down the line in the first inning, the run they scored was from Jazz Chisholm hustling and great base running. Like, I really didn't watch last night and thought the problem was passion. The problem was the bullpen's an absolute mess, and the manager let a guy who didn't have it stay in the game to save the bullpen for today and tomorrow and the next day. And the offense was absolutely inept in the biggest moments. Do you think Verdugo bunted because of a lack of passion? Do you think Stanton popped out because he's not passionate enough? Like, I agree there's an urgency that needs to be made, but, like, again, like, everyone's in the postgame, Aaron Boone says, look, we had good at-bats. You know, the offense wasn't the problem, the pitching was. Now, I think the offense early on in this game is the game. If they score runs, if they get out to a 4, 5, 6 run lead like they were more than capable of, and had certainly had the opportunity to do so, I feel like that game's over. That's how you beat up on bad teams. You get them out. You get them out of their games early and feel like, oh, listen, here's another night we're going to lose. Instead, they gave them passion by their inability to come through in the clutch. And, you know, the pitching was bad and the offense didn't come through early on. Maybe I'm wrong. You tell me. You watched that game and saw a real lack of passion. And if Aaron Boone kills them in the postgame, if Aaron Boone, instead of saying, like, and this is what gets me with some of the stuff in the postgame. Now, I'll agree, the Verdugo comments are bad for me. And maybe there is an overall tone being built by this manager that's detrimental to the team. I'm open to that. But, like, I got a bunch of people tweeting at me. He said they had good at-bats. Can you believe this guy? He said they had good at-bats. I'm like, okay. I disagree. In the clutch, they had terrible at-bats. Now, they had decent enough at-bats to get 20 guys on. But let's just say that's a ridiculous comment. Let's just say that. Let's. I'm not even arguing with you. Let's just say it. It's a given. Aaron Boone is full of baloney when he says we had good at-bats. Do you think if he said we didn't have good at-bats and it's unacceptable or started crushing people, that the next time the Yankees won't pop up because the manager, like, do you think that they think it's okay to pop up? Do you think it's okay to not come through in the spots? Like, they, do you think they left that game going, hey, it's all right, the manager said we are good at-bats? I'm just, like, it's about coming through in the moment. And that scares me because this team has perpetually, this year, previous years, this entire Aaron Boone, going back to the ALCS in 2017, they have not hit in the clutch come the biggest games of the year. And that's what scares me. And I don't know if it's a tightness, because between what we saw from Gleyber Torres at the end of the game yesterday, or 2 days ago now, and then the inability to come through, and it almost like it manifests itself. It's like if they don't do it in their first opportunity to do it, it's like, well, now they feel like they have to, and the weight gets heavier and heavier, and the pressure gets more and more. And yet Gleyber Torres practically falling down on an easy ground ball to end the game. Like, the moment seems big for these guys, and I don't know why. And if we want to blame the manager for that, fine, too. I'm open to it. If they don't win this year, he's going to be gone, and we'll have another guy we could yell and blame for all the stuff. Whoever they bring in, we'll blame them. Don't worry about it, I promise you. People now yearn for the days of Joe Girardi. I was still around here. I was listening. You all hated him. You all complained about him. You called him Mr. Binder. Right? Joe Torre deemed him the Binder or whatever. Like, he never goes by his gut. He's terrible at managing the bullpen. Heard the same stuff. Hated him. As, you know, Vernon Wells and Lyle Overbay weren't coming through. You hated him. And you'll hate the next guy. But hopefully they win and we won't have to find out. But I didn't sense a lack of passion. There have been games where there's nothing. And it's, you know, to quote the great Mike Francesa, bink, 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 inning after inning, nothing going on. That's where you could argue lack of passion. They had 20 runners on. That's almost impossible to have as many base runners as they have and score two runs. It's almost impossible. They haven't done it since 1912. Pat in the Bronx, what's up, Pat?
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm okay. I was watching the Yankee game last night. I realized it was a done deal when I clicked the clicker. But I have a conspiracy theory about the Yankees. It's humorous.
Okay. Here it is. Yeah, okay. What do you got?
You tell me, and if it's ridiculous, you tell me.
Okay.
The Yankees, the reason they lost to the White Sox and the reason they will lose to the White Sox the next 2 days is because they want the Mets to maintain the record for the worst number of wins for a team, 120. That'll never be broken, and the Yankees are assuring that by giving Chicago 3 wins. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know it's ridiculous. But I appreciate it. You know, I actually saw, and thank you for the call. It was a little feedback every time I spoke. Sorry, Pat, I'll let you go. I actually saw Howie Rose tweet. I was going to mention this. I forgot about it. Thank you for reminding me. Howie Rose, and I'm paraphrasing, but I'll give you the gist of the tweet. Howie Rose pretty much tweeted out that he, in no uncertain terms, wants the White Sox to win and wants to hold the 1962 Mets as the worst team in the history of baseball, the most losses in the history of baseball, whatever, because it's part of the charm of the story. Because it's part of who they are, that miserable season, and then only to, you know, to never finish anywhere but last place up until the year of 1969 when they won the World Series, that it's all part of it. And it makes 69 special, knowing that the worst team in the history of baseball was 62. And I could see that. I could definitely see that. I mean, it happened in 1962. Who the hell cares? Like, honestly, I would like, is that like a, is that something the Met fans would be, you know, pleased to let go of? Is that something that would make you happy if somehow another team overtook the worst record in the history of the sport? Does it matter at this point? It is part of the charm. If they didn't win in 1969, maybe you'd feel differently. But the idea that they started in 62, were the worst team ever, and in a short 7-year span, 8-year span, found themselves winning the World Series? I could get that. I could see that. But I don't think the Yankees give a damn. EJ in Allentown. What's up, EJ?
C-Mac, how are you, man? I didn't call for this reason, but I got to throw it in there. A buddy of mine texted me last night, big Yankee fan, said just what you were talking about. If George were still around, Boone would have been fired after last night. And I told him if George was still around, Boone wouldn't have survived the Mets sweep, so he'd have been firing somebody else last night.
Yeah, right. And you know what? He probably would have fired the interim, and they'd be on the third manager, and they'd be worse off for it.
He might have. Hey, switching gears for 2 seconds. Your thoughts on this kid from Boston, this Jaren Duran.
Yeah.
Get suspended 2 games for a homophobic slur.
Yeah.
And the hypocrisy of Major League Baseball that Tom Brenneman loses a 33-year career over something very similar. This guy gets a 2-game suspension.
Well, I mean, the difference is I don't believe it wasn't Major League Baseball that suspended him. I mean, it wasn't Major League Baseball that decided Brenneman couldn't have a career. So it's not hypocrisy on Major League Baseball. The network, I believe, decided that. So it's not, that's the difference, at least as far as that hypocrisy that you wanted to bring up the Brenneman part of it. Yeah. I mean, it's something he, you know, you gotta be, you can't say those things. That's a terrible thing to say. And he's paying for it. And he got suspended 2 games. And I'm sure there are many people who think, you don't think it's a reasonable suspension. I'm sure there are many people who feel he should have been suspended a lot more than that. But I don't see the connection you're trying to create.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Manning calling signal. Takes the snap. Looks left. Off the left. First is wide open. Touchdown, Giants! In the left corner of the end zone.
Touchdown.
With 35 seconds to go, the Giants regain the lead.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 4:49. McMonagle here with you for another few minutes until the warm-up show. Minko yesterday, I had to run out of here because I got to be home to get my kids ready for soccer camp this week. I didn't get a chance to see him. I saw him yesterday during the show. He was focused, man. That's Minko. He wasn't messing around. Minko didn't come here to just, you know, wave hands and kiss babies. He was here to do business yesterday. He was here to give you the sports, not every 20 minutes like he used to, but he was there to do updates. He was very concerned about making sure the printer was working. He was, you know, there was no messing around with Mink yesterday. I was looking forward to talk to him. I did get to see him. I spoke to him a little bit, but I have to admit, seeing me was not enough. He did not just immediately, you know, fall into my arms and tell me how his life is going. He was, I would have loved to really had a chance to talk to Mink. Mink was focused. And then listening in, he did a great job on the on the warm-up show, he actually had an interesting point with the Yankees. He was talking with Fleegs yesterday about the Yankees, and he said, you know, if the Yankees hit home runs, they'll win. And if they don't hit home runs, they'll probably lose. And oh, was he so right? Because the Yankees did not hit a home run yesterday. And you know what happened? You'll never guess this. They lost. They lost. He's a prophet. Not only is he one of the kindest, sweetest, greatest men I've ever had a chance to know, and it was great to see him, and I would, you know, hope to see him more often, but I mean, the man knows his baseball. Prophet. Yankees hit home runs, they win. Yankees don't hit home runs, they lose. How can you argue? Another night without a home run, although Judge came close in that fourth inning. Couldn't get it done. I'm sorry, in the second inning, actually. Second inning. But the Yankees have an embarrassing loss. Jets and Hassan Riddick. The other situation going on is he's now demanded or, you know, asked for a trade out after getting traded in April. A lot of miscommunication, a lot of, you know, he said kind of stuff going on where, you know, he claims that they promised him a contract. I mean, and we all know where the Jets look bad. The Jets look bad. He wanted a deal. And the idea that he would have gladly come on board to play, I mean, that's what the Jets are telling you. The Jets are telling you they had an understanding where they knew he wanted him to deal. They made him what is being classified as a low ball offer. Who knows what the offer was, but it was an offer he said no to. They made the trade anyway, and the Jets will tell you under the guise of he'll play for this year and then we'll figure it out, that they weren't going to pay him big money, the money he was asking, without them, without him doing something for them. They wanted to see him play. And so they were under the impression, now we'll make the trade. We'll figure out a way, whether it's guaranteeing some money this year. We'll figure it out. He'll play this year. And then we'll work on a deal. Where he's saying he's under the impression that, no, not a one-year thing was going to work. I was told we were going to continue to negotiate on a long-term contract. I haven't heard from you, so you will not see me. And here we are at an impasse where the Jets are saying, well, we're talking one-year deal if you show up. And he's talking, I'm not showing up until we start talking a long-term deal. So here we are. And the Jets look foolish for making a deal for a player who wanted a contract and not now trying to tell us, well, hey, we thought he didn't need a contract. And the player looks terrible because he did a press conference where he said, I'll be there, I'll be here, I don't know how many years, but I'm going to do it, and I'm going to play for my team, and I'm going to play for the fans, and I can't wait, I'm excited to be here. And then he disappeared, and now he hasn't shown up. And now it's dragging on into the season. And for me, it just feels like the leverage is all with the Jets until the games are played. I mean, and they've already come out and said they're not going to trade Reddick. I don't expect them to. I don't think it makes any sense to trade him. And so they're just going to let him sit there and acquire, you know, accrue all of this debt and fine him every single day he's not there. And once the games start, then we'll decide who has the leverage. Because if the Jets, with an easy schedule, you know, barring the opening night in Miami, in San Francisco on Monday night, I had Monday, Miami, that first Monday night game in San Francisco, barring that, I mean, you look at week two, Tennessee, week three, New England, week four, the Broncos, week five, Minnesota. I mean, week six, then you finally hit Buffalo. But those first 5 weeks, Jets better be 3-2 at the bare minimum. Very good chance of being 4-1. And who knows, maybe better than that. And if that happens and this defense is playing well, and I think they view him as kind of a luxury kind of guy anyway, where they traded a compensatory third-round pick for him where, you know, if he works out great, if not, I mean, they have McDonald, they have Clemens, they have some options there, and then plus they have a great defensive front altogether that this defense has done really well over the last couple of years. So along with Aaron Rodgers, hopefully healthy and playing, knock on wood, a revamped offensive line, and, you know, an added wide receiver weapon to go along with Wilson and obviously Hall at the running back position, who's as dynamic, you know, this side of McCaffrey in the league, hopefully the Jets are off to a good start, and this all starts to fade away, and the pressure on the Jets fade away, and the calling for Reddick fades away, and he's sitting there with nothing to do but pay his fines. Or the flip side of that coin, where they play terribly and get embarrassed and don't come near Purdy in a San Francisco game and get blown out and struggle offensively, and they get off to a slow start, and suddenly, where's this world-class pass rusher you traded for? So that's kind of how I see it, where I'm not sure where the disconnect happened, but the Jets will never get the benefit of the doubt as long as they're the Jets, the haven't made the playoffs in 13 years Jets. That's who they are. That's who they are until things change, and that's the perception, and they will never get the benefit of the doubt on anything. But for me, this is a non-issue until the season starts, and then we see who begins to build the leverage. But right now, the Jets have no reason to pay him, no reason to do anything else, no reason to trade him, and no reason to do anything else but fine him every day. And I don't really see the benefit of it for Reddick, but again, I don't begrudge any NFL player doing what they think is in their best interest money-wise, because the teams would just as soon drop you if they felt it would save them a nickel. So, and it's as brutal a sport and as tough on the body as anything, and they, you know, and they do it for our enjoyment on Sundays. So me, for one, I will never begrudge a player trying to get the money he thinks he deserves, but he's got to decide whether it's worth it. 888-808-1019. Kevin in Florida. What's up, Kev? Kevin.
Hey, what's up, C-Mac?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm right here, man. I'm doing well. How are you, man? Hey, usually not up this early. Just happened to catch you. I heard you previously. I want to let you know you're doing a great job, man.
Oh, thank you very much, Kev.
It's good to check in. And didn't have a Jet take, but I'm a Jet fan, and I'm with you, man. No reason to pay him. Let him sit out, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
we'll see who bucks first.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's funny, because I wasn't sure where the Jet fan was on this thing. Did you have a major, an opinion up until the point he asked for the trade? Because I always feel like when a player will ask for a trade, then suddenly, because now he's forcing the issue, I suppose, as opposed to sitting out is kind of forcing the issue. But when he demands the trade, I feel like you lose. I feel like you lose.
Like, how is this conversation not had? Like, I'd like to really know what went on with those conversations.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, the conversation was had. The difference is they played a game of telephone, and they feel like they each said something different. I mean, that's the issue. The issue is they heard. I saw Deanna Rossini had a little bit of an explanation on it real quick. They heard, hey, let's, here, the Jets traded for Reddick knowing, this is Deanna Rossini. The Jets traded for Reddick knowing you wanted a contract. We all get that. All teams interested with the Eagles were told this. Jets made a below-market offer for the trade. Reddick turned down. The Jets moved forward with the trade anyway, figuring they could work on a one-year deal. Reddick was under the understanding that they were going to continue to work on a long-term deal. Somewhere along the line, wires got crossed. And again, to me, now this becomes a wait-and-see game until leverage is built, and that gets built in the regular season. And we'll see how much money he wants to lose. That's it for me. Thank you guys for calling. Thank you for listening. Alex on the other side, I appreciate it. Yankees baseball later today. Nestor Cortez on the mound. It better be enough of this nonsense. Mets get back in business as well. Start a homestand against lousy teams as well. So let's hope our two New York playoff contenders can beat up on some bad teams over the next couple of days. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. I'll catch you again tomorrow at 2 a.m. I'm out of here.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM. WFAN.